Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
This episode of Canada Land is brought to you by the Center for Addiction and Mental Health, CAMH. There is an incredible facility right here in downtown Toronto that is helping on the front lines and is doing incredible innovative research. They are a facility that treats everybody with dignity, and they need your help. May 6th to 12th is Mental Health Week. If this matters to you, help CAMH. There's no better place for your resources. Go to camh.ca/CanadaLand and donate now. Help CAMH treat addiction and build hope.
Hey, you're listening to the free version of Canada Land, and God bless you for it. But on the other side of this velvet red rope lies a VIP premium feed with no ads on it. It's just like the version that you're listening to, only there are no ads on it. And also, you will be supporting the show and helping us to do the work that we do. Just click the link in your show notes. It's $5 Canadian a month, or go to CanadaLandShow.com/join, and it'll automatically bloop install a premium feed on your podcatcher. Do it. Martin Patrickwin, Quebec correspondent for The Logic, joining me from Montreal. Welcome to the show, Marty.
Thank you very much for having me.
Marty, today we're going to talk about inside sources close to the Prime Minister have confidentially leaked reporters a hot scoop. Turns out Justin Trudeau is awesome. But don't quote me on that. He would be so mad. Also, why some print newspapers in Quebec are thriving. Turns out the answer was right in front of us all along. The secret ingredient is racism. Glad to have you here.
Thanks.
This episode of Shortcuts is brought to you by Courtney Simpson, J.R. Dingwall, Keenan Chirka, Cindy Ma, Catherine Boschman, Marina White, Drew Franklin, and Will Straw.
This is Will Straw. I'm a professor of communication studies at McGill University and a big fan of Canada Land. If you want bold investigative reporting on the Wee scandal, on racism in Canadian media, on the COVID pandemic, or the Nova Scotia mass killings, Canada Land is your most reliable source.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp, therapy online that has served over 3 million people around the world, and it's available here in Canada. And this time of year, we're all emerging from our winter-like seclusion and, patio season and socializing, and it can be terrifically fun, but it can also create a lot of pressure. And some people get, like, anxiety, social anxiety from being out too much. What did Iggy Pop say about social life? It's torture dressed as fun. It doesn't need to be torture. I think it's just about finding, like, the right balance of how much of other people do you want? I mean, we need each other, but I think that at a certain point, it can become overwhelming. And talking to somebody about yourself, about your social life, about your relationships is a way of gaining insight into what is right for you. It's not selfish to examine that with a professional. And as the largest online therapy provider in the world, BetterHelp can provide access to mental health professionals with a wide variety of expertise in mental health. Listeners of the show get 10% off of their first month at betterhelp.com/CanadaLand. That's better, H-E-L-P, betterhelp.com/CanadaLand. This episode of Canada Land is brought to you by the Center for Addiction and Mental Health, CAMH. We got a tour of their facilities in their downtown Toronto campus, and I was blown away by the heroic work that these people are doing. They are saving lives every day. I know people whose lives were saved, and they just really care about the dignity of the people who turn to them for help. Look, we talk a lot about these issues on Canada Land. We talk about the crisis that is claiming 20 lives every day in Canada to drug overdoses, but we don't give you a lot of options of what you can do about it. CAMH is an option. CAMH desperately needs resources that they directly put into their work, saving lives and turning people's lives around. Listen, May 6th to 12th is Mental Health Week. This is when they need your help the most. Go to camh.ca/CanadaLand to help CAMH treat addiction and build hope. And Marty, this episode of our podcast is brought to everyone by CFUV and Eventide. Eventide is a free online concert series featuring weekly shows in July and August. It's organized by CFUV and the City of Victoria, British Columbia. Eventide features local artists from around Victoria and a diverse array of musical genres. You can find the streams at twitch.tv/Eventide Music Series, all one word, Eventide Music Series. You can find more information at eventidevictoria.com or go to the Facebook page, Eventide Music Series. Martin, you've covered politics in a number of different ways, and I think you know a bit about how things work in terms of the relationship between government and the press. I want to ask you a question.
Yep.
Have you ever had a story fed to you by a source and you get the sense that you're being used?
No, with the caveat that I'm not in Ottawa, I'm in Montreal, and, you know, location, location, location. So usually when I'm calling various government people, it is more on my own volition. In that situation, yes, I've called them before, and it's been like, you get the feeling that they are trying to torque you one direction or another, but I haven't been given a story. No, not that I can think of.
I have been, and I don't necessarily mean to sneer on the whole practice. I mean, the idea that every story starts with somebody needed the truth to be known because they believe in the public's rights. Like, where does news come from? Often somebody's got an agenda. That doesn't mean it's not news. So I've had occasions where somebody has like given me a story that's embarrassing to their opponents. And I think, you know, you absolutely want to question if you're being used or not, but sometimes it's a good story, you know? It's complicated.
The thing that you just said is key. It's a good story. That covers a hell of a lot of sin. Undeniably. If it's a good story, it's a good story, whether you're being used or not.
Sometimes it's not such a good story. I want to, there's a couple pieces that caught my attention. I want to run through a few lines from them. This was in the Toronto Star on August 8th by Tonda McCharles, political reporter in Ottawa. Headline is, "Insiders say Justin Trudeau doesn't want an election. He wants to seize the moment and push through bold change." Huh. Wow.
Yeah.
So, this is a hot scoop.
To be fair to Tonda, she didn't write the headline. Okay. Let's just get that out of the way.
That's true. But she did write this. This is a story that is built on sourcing from confidential, assumedly government sources. So I'll read from it. "Inside Trudeau's Liberal government, an age-old debate is alive. How not to waste the opportunity presented by COVID-19. First of all, that's not an age-old debate, but let's, okay. There's a growing sense that key players believe that now is the time to take a more aggressive approach to being progressive. Trudeau and his inner circle are weighing how to roll out bigger, bolder changes aimed at bolstering Canada's competitive position post-pandemic. One source said, there's an opportunity for us to think big. Can we actually present a big vision? I think we can." So it's strange to me as a news reader, why would this information need to be conveyed confidentially? If you've got some source close to Justin Trudeau, it's like, hey, you didn't hear it from me, but we've got big, wonderful things planned. I think the question that you have to ask, whether you're being played or not, is why would I give this person confidentiality? And why do they want me to run this story? If it's a member of the Trudeau government trying to put a pro-Trudeau story in your newspaper, why wouldn't they want their name on that? I think you got to ask that question.
It's also, too, if you go through that quote that you just read, which is like, what, 10 paragraphs in. So let's go through it. Childcare, clean energy, climate change, vulnerable people, root out discrimination, working people, progressive ideas, big vision. That is the Liberal Party of Canada's, basically, their campaign platform in 2015. They've been saying the same things for 5 years. It is an odd one, I will admit.
The explanation given, the Star is not identifying the sources because they were not authorized to speak publicly.
Right.
Well, why wouldn't you be authorized to say that you're trying to...
That you're amazing.
Yeah. This is a secret, but we're amazing and we're going to be even more amazing. Here's an interesting way of attributing a source. One insider with knowledge of the prime minister's thinking said that Trudeau is not looking at provoking a fall election, but he's looking towards the recovery phase.
He's in a minority government and he hasn't even power for even a year. Of course he's not looking for an election. He's in the middle of a pandemic. Nobody's looking for a freaking election. The Bloc Québécois is the only one out there right now saber rattling. And I dare them to try to make the government fall because they will lose their shirts if they do it. That whole paragraph is ridiculous.
What is the story? The only story I can think of here is that, like, the timing of the story is the story, which is that, like, in a week after just a terrible, you can call it a scandal, you can call it a controversy, but the effect of the wee controversy on the Trudeau government was not good. And here is a big headline in the Toronto Star about, like, this kind of FDR New Deal-like vision they have for the future of Canada, leaked to the press by confidential sources. Like, there's a very clear motive as to why they would want this to be in the press, but it's much less clear as to why they wouldn't just put their name to it.
The interesting thing, of course, is that, again, we're probably 80% way through the story, and then it talks a bit about the conflict between Morneau and Trudeau. And that sort of leads to what Bob Fyfe wrote this week, right?
Yeah, you bring up the second story that I wanted to talk about, this Bob Fyfe thing that 2 days later ran in the Globe.
Yeah.
And, you know, Fyfe is certainly not afraid to run stuff that this government hates, but he is very much an access journalist who is, like, he's got the deep sources, right? So here's Fyfe with this story. Finance Minister Bill Morneau's job could be in jeopardy after clashes with the Prime Minister, sources say.
Yeah.
So again, a story built on sources and insiders, basically suggesting, you know, I saw this coming and it was sort of suggested in some of Trudeau's language a week or two ago that Morneau is going to take the fall for the wee thing. But here's Fyfe with, like, a bit more than that. Like, he's been fighting with the prime minister and Morneau's going to go. And then later we find out that, you know, Mark Carney might be the new minister, but he's got to become an MP first. And then, you know, this is obviously built on Fyfe sources, I assumed, in the prime minister's office. But then not a few hours later, the prime minister's office says, this is not true. We're 100% behind Bill Morneau, but not committing to whether or not he's actually going to keep his job as finance minister. And then that triggers columns from Andrew Coyne and Campbell Clark. All of a sudden, we're talking about, is it true? Is it not true? Is he coming? Is he going? You know, it's not like as sunny a positive story for the Trudeau government as Tony McCharles in the Star. But you know what it isn't? It's not more wee controversy shit. It's just your usual horse race and trading and cabinet shuffle.
The interesting thing is that not long after Fyfe's story, and actually not long after Tonda's story came out, Trudeau came out and said, we have full faith in Morneau, et cetera, et cetera. So all this to say is that they sort of denied the fact that Morneau is going anywhere. What they didn't do is come out and say, you know what, actually Justin Trudeau isn't all that awesome. we want to retract that. He doesn't have bold vision.
You know, I can't ignore the way that these stories that are built on insider sourcing, people who have a clear motivation to move Canada's political conversation away from where it was for the past month, they're the ones who originated these stories. And now the political conversation is about all these other things. Throw in a little bit about, you know, the governor general. Suddenly we find out this salacious story about her. And then, you know, somebody yells obscenities at Catherine McKenna. You know, it's terrible. I'm not trying to downplay the misogyny of this, but now we've got a whole news cycle about her having a press conference about the kind of abuse that we're just talking about a lot of other things all of a sudden. Am I, like, trying to weave some crazy conspiracy here, or like, it just seems to me like a pretty clear meat and potatoes, hey, let's get everybody talking about something else.
I think you're partially right. I think the idea that the PMO does what the PMO does is try to obfuscate when they're in deep trouble, as they were with the wee stuff. The one thing I would say about Morneau, in the case of Morneau, I think it's a little bit special, because when you start seeing friction between a prime minister and his or her finance minister, it starts wreaking havoc on the markets. It scares investors, et cetera, et cetera. So the fact that they came out and issued what they said, like a non-denial, basically, I think that was part of the play as well, is the fact that they wanted to make sure that not necessarily Morneau himself, but that Canada's finances were in order, or as good order as they could be in these times. We're not seeing anything different than any other iteration of the PMO, the modern day PMO, I guess, that started with Justin Trudeau's father, Pierre Trudeau, the all-seeing, all-knowing, all-powerful, top-down organization that it is, that basically is a PR agency. They're good at it. They're good at it sometimes. They're bad at it sometimes, but they will always try to do the exact same kind of thing.
You know, to go back to where we started with this, when I asked you if you've ever felt like you've been played, the best insurance against that is kind of like your stories originate with you. Like, you're curious about something. You have a question about something. I guess maybe somebody brings you some information, but like, you're not a member of the Parliamentary Press Gallery or an Ottawa-based, you're not the person that they would turn to.
No, they would.
When people are in that community, I've heard, it wasn't an off-the-record thing. I heard Justin Ling at a conference saying there's nothing wrong with access journalism, with being friends, with having sort of semi-social relationships with people in government. It's not that somebody has one beer too many and spills something they shouldn't have. It's always for a reason. And some journalists, I think, are like, that's fine. Somebody's going to report that. I'd rather it be me. I'd rather have the scoop. I get that. I guess I just feel like, you know, is there a special font we could use or something to indicate? I don't feel like it's necessarily so fair to the reader, these stories. Like, I feel like it requires a level of insider knowledge as to how information moves in Ottawa that you can't really expect a general reader to have. And I don't know that these are like, the sourcing isn't really transparent. It's just like, trust me, I know people in government and they're telling me this. And there's no level of analysis as to why they're telling us this.
I'd predicate it by saying that I think that the Rob Fife story, as I said before, and the Todd McCarroll story are in two different baskets.
Yeah.
The Fife story is almost like a process story. Like, this has been going on for a long time. And Trudeau / the PMO is getting tired of Morneau's antics or whatever it is. Whereas the Tanya Mataro story is, we can't waste this pandemic. We have to be more awesome.
Martin, one last sponsor to thank today, and that is HelloFresh, Canada's most recommended meal kit. You ever do this? You ever get a box of ingredients sent to your house to make a meal?
Yes, I do. I do get boxes of food.
Yeah, it's a pretty good way to go. I mean, it takes a bunch of chores and it just turns it into a delightful experience of what did I get today? Did I get speedy ginger pork stir fry with sugar snap peas and corn? Or did I get cheesy beef pepper and corn enchiladas with pico de gallo that you kind of make yourself? Whatever you get, you can make it in 20 or 30 minutes and it's a break from the routine and they use fresh seasonal ingredients. I've done this a number of times and it's just always really appreciated that there's just something new to eat that probably we wouldn't have been eating otherwise. HelloFresh does all the meal planning, the shopping, and the prepping, so dinner is solved for busy weeknights. They have kid-friendly recipes. My kids like the stuff. They're guaranteed to please even the pickiest of eaters. Look at this deal. $80 off of your first 3 weeks of HelloFresh. That includes free shipping. Go to HelloFresh.ca/CanadaLand80 and enter the code CanadaLand80. One last time, that's HelloFresh.ca/CanadaLand80, promo code CanadaLand80 for $80 off of your first 3 weeks of HelloFresh, including shipping. Marty, let's note some things that people might have missed.
I would like to note.
Let's do it. I'm going to bring up the hasty dismissal of Tara Thorne, a beloved arts and culture reporter in Halifax for the CBC and elsewhere. You know, somebody who is just... seems to be loved up and down for not only being really good at her job as an arts correspondent, but somebody who really like brought new attention to people who weren't getting it, exposed people to wonderful stuff they otherwise would not have known. Somebody, you know, who was really valued in the arts and culture community and beyond. But here's what happened to Tara Thorne. The Premier of Nova Scotia, Stephen McNeill, announced that he's stepping down. And it was reported that, you know, he's just like leaving politics, more time for the family. It's been hard on his kids, all of the public criticism of the premier, to which Tara Thorne responded on Twitter. Oh, you know, to this point, it was hard for his kids. She wrote, "It was hard for me to hear his son bang my downstairs neighbor the exact same way every night."
Ooh.
That's the kind of thing that I might tweet or anyone might tweet. It's the kind of thing people put on Twitter and then sometimes think, that wasn't the banger that I thought it was going
to
be.
So to speak.
Yeah. So didn't even realize I did that there. Yeah. I mean, I don't think it's the worst joke ever. Like, it's just kind of like, it's a bit mean. The part of it that I kind of like is like, she's complaining not necessarily that it was hard to hear the premier's son having sex with her neighbor, but that he did so in the exact same way. The monotony of the banging was what caused
is what bothered her.
Yeah. yeah. So
I think that this does not require that much serious consideration, except to say that Wendy Mesley has not been dismissed. She's been reprimanded for, I guess, repeatedly using the N-word in editorial meetings. And yet Tara Thorne was immediately dismissed from the CBC. And what I'm duly noting is that the arts community and just people who enjoy her work and just feel like this is like, come on, CBC, like you had, like Gian Gameschi, like sexually assaulted a colleague and kept his job for years after that. You're going to get rid of her for a bad tweet. She deleted the tweet. She apologized for the tweet. It's an interesting one for me, Marty. And part of why I'm duly noting it is not just like that. I do think this is an overreaction. It doesn't seem fair at all. But I know that I try to see things from other points of view. And I've had many conversations on the show about it's not cancel culture. It's consequence culture, as Desmond Cole puts it. And like there are consequences to the things you say. I'm wrestling with this one because I just kind of feel like it's minor. I have a hard time seeing this as the consequence meeting the crime, as it were. And I also just know that it's just like indicative of like a shitty caste system at the CBC, whereby if Tara was like staff, they couldn't just get rid of her like that. It's just like just to get rid of somebody like that after, I think, you know, she's been there for a long time. It seems pretty shitty.
When things like this are put to me, I always go like, well, what would someone do to me if I'd done that? And I think I would have expected the exact same kind of treatment. You can't say that kind of thing. You just can't.
If only he'd mixed it up a little bit. If only he'd tried some different stuff out, you know? We could have avoided all of this. I don't know. I mean, this idea that de facto, if people are angry about something on Twitter, then the person loses their job. No, there were decision makers at CBC who could have gone a different way with this. Or maybe she just crossed the line and this is just how it goes.
I think that's just it. I think the CBC was presented with this and then they look at it and go like, well, do we want to be associated with someone who's going to fly off like that? And have that person, as you say, very much associated with our brand. And clearly the answer was no.
I guess is their call to make. Like the only thing being that they're a public broadcaster and the public maybe should have some say in whether they want to keep hearing from her or not. But I guess they can exercise their desire to hear more from Tara Thorne in all kinds of other ways.
There you go. Duly noted.
Marty, what do you have today?
Canadian Polish language newspaper called Głos. Rhymes with post, but with no T and a G, and lots of anti-Semitism, as it turns out. So they ran a piece. This is by Tom Blackwell, old friend of mine from the National Post. The Polish newspaper published a couple of anti-Semitic tirades in which they suggested that COVID-19 was created by, air quotes, organized Jewry, and that the Jews caused COVID, et cetera, et cetera. Goes on to say that people like Lenin and Goebbels were all covert Jews, of course. Israel is the cause of all the world's woes, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah.
Not much reason to really look at this, apart from the fact that, you know, like as you would look at a car crash, you know, it's the old joke. The idea that Jews are organized over anything have never been in the room with two Jews because they could never agree on anything anyway. But it's the fact that, you know, that the newspaper got government money and got government money recently to the tune of $270,000. So a bit odd that they continue to publish this kind of stuff.
I mean, it's amazing to me that like these libels, you know, from the bubonic plague, Jews spreading the Black Death to like modern day. I don't know where to begin with this. If in fact organized world Jewry had cooked up COVID-19, would it be a Polish Canadian newspaper that would blow the lid off of that conspiracy?
Right. And would they have inflicted said COVID on New York City? I don't think so.
What does it say here? That this is the fault of usually Jewish psychopaths, which is the name of the the hardcore band I tried to start in high school, the usually Jewish psychopaths. I won't treat this with much seriousness, so I will mock this idiotic bigotry. And of course, I'm disgusted by the fact that it's government supported. I have my own kind of, you might even call it a prejudice, Marty, which is that I have like a harder time with Polish anti-Semitism than even German anti-Semitism, because like I have my conception as a Jew is that unlike Germany, Poland never, as a nation, never fully accepted its role in the Holocaust. And so when you hear this kind of retrograde venomous bullshit, it gets me angrier than just about anybody else being anti-Semitic.
Poland in general does not like to be looped into it. So it's almost like they went the other way. They go like, no, we had nothing to do with this. This was Germany. It was never us.
Yeah.
Whereas, you know, obviously Germany has spent decades upon decades trying to make amends for what it did during World War II. Poland, not so much.
Yeah. Not all Polish people. Duly noted. There's one last thing I want to bring up. You know, we're talking about all kinds of different things here, and it feels like there's just something massive that we haven't talked about at all. As journalists, Marty, but also as just humans in the world, what a tragedy it is to see kind of the fall of Hong Kong, and what a tragedy as a journalist to see stormtroopers, cops raiding the offices of Apple Daily and arresting publisher Jimmy Lai. It was just a horrific sight. The aspect of that that I wish to duly note, the Canadian angle, if you will, is the Torstar-owned Chinese language Tsingtao, which is Canada's largest circulation Chinese language newspaper. They rejected a full-page ad that was criticizing the new national security law in Hong Kong, which basically places Hong Kong and free expression in Hong Kong under Beijing control. Tsingtao rejected an advertisement that was purchased by 40 or so pro-democracy activists who cobbled together $3,000 to decry this law. Their side of this is reasonable, which is essentially that, you know, we have discretion as to who we sell ads to. This wasn't like a known group. This was just like a bunch of people buying an ad under like the moniker concerned citizens kind of a thing. And, you know, under a different context, I would be criticizing a news organization for running a political ad that was not properly attributed. But in this case, I just feel like it's worth noting, because the more I read about what is happening in Hong Kong and what's happening with the Uyghur community, the more I feel like the kind of fence sitting that Canada and Canadian institutions and Canadian media have been trying to kind of balance with China for a long time, I kind of feel like we're increasingly getting forced to taking a side, and which side that is getting clearer.
Yeah, and you know, the crackdown on Hong Kong, there's two aspects of it that are tragic. It's the crackdown itself, of course, but it's also the idea that, you know, China is centrally governed, and China as a government decided that it would be able to get away with this. What we're talking about right now is basically the effects of that. They looked at it and said, look, we're going to get a lot of grief for this. Obviously, this is what we're doing is a pretty big thing, but we're going to do it anyways because we think we can get away with it. And they are in the process. I will just say it. They are in the process of getting away with it. Duly noted.
Hey, you're going to notice that the recording quality switches here. We're doing our best through the pandemic, but every once in a while, we do run into some technical difficulties. Thanks for understanding. Back to the show. Marty, you and I have talked about the notorious PKP before, Pierre-Carl Péladeau, sort of like the last of the old world newspaper barons, a unique figure in Canada, but one who I think is most familiar to Quebecers. I read this piece that you just had in The Logic that was interesting in like three different ways about how he is kind of bucking all common wisdom about newspapers. His papers are thriving, but it's complicated. And I'm wondering if you can take us through that a little bit.
Well, we'll get to the complicated stuff later, but just on a sort of purely business front, you know, you look around the country, as you do around the world mostly, and you look at print journalism and how it's going, and it's not going well. And the thing that sort of attracted me to the story was coming at it as a business perspective. It's going like, how is it that this company, Quebecois, which publishes Journal de Montréal and Journal de Québec, how is it that they're still printing 7 editions a week? In print, they have, you know, something in the order of 2.4, 2.5 billion print readers a week. And get this, they actually hired during the COVID-19 pandemic, when everybody else is laying people off, furloughing them, et cetera. I just got into that and found out that the saving grace for these two newspapers is A, that they're actually are doing quite well. In terms of subscriptions, in terms of people buying them and that kind of thing. But they're also part of this massive organization that is Quebecor that produces content on all sorts of different platforms and has a cable interest in Videotron that does remarkably well. You use the term, you know, old school newspaper baron in there. And one of the things that's old school newspaper barons used to do was buy these papers for the sake of them not necessarily making a whole lot of money, although they did back in the day, but also to sort of give them a bully pulpit and a place in the national conversation. I get the feeling that that's exactly what Mr. Pellitto likes about having this newspaper. It's tied to that. It's also tied to the fact that his father started them back in the 60s, and that he's sort of making a point of bucking the trend in print newspaper when everybody else is trying to get out of the game.
I mean, he's an old school media baron, if like the early 2000s are old school, in that he's captain of this vertical integration empire where you've got both the content and the means of delivery, and now you've got like elsewhere in Canada that's falling apart. Like Rogers is just like wildly divesting itself of content, owning the internet pipes is where the money is at. But Quebec is just a very different beast. And whereas in English Canada, you are competing with all of American media for English speaking Canadians media attention, Quebecers really do consume the shit out of Quebec made media. And that just creates such a more favorable market condition.
Yeah. I hope you're using the word shit in a nice way, because a lot of it's actually really good. In terms of a lot of the content, and I put Radio-Canada and Quebecor in that, there is content on those shows that will, if you can straddle that language barrier, is up there, if not exceeding a lot of the sort of standards that you get in the United States. That's something that has to be said. It's not just being produced, and it's not just, people aren't just watching it because it's in French. Quebecor especially figured out that you can't necessarily just do that. You have to be able to produce quality stuff.
We were discussing that in the newsroom yesterday, that it's not simply a matter that like trashy and racist content thrives in Quebec because it's Quebec. That would be a gross oversimplification, because there's just like the full spectrum is still viable in Quebec in the way that it is. So there's a lot of like really high quality investigative reporting happening in Quebec.
Absolutely.
In that spectrum also exists Journal de Montréal. However, you know, La Presse ain't doing so well.
Nope.
But the Journal is thriving. The same gambit that Sun News Television took, that they could replicate a Fox News thing in Canada and they failed miserably in English Canada, it does feel like there's a tabloid right-wing press and outspoken, fiery columnists. You write about this. Tell me about Richard Martineau and the influence of a columnist is just like not something we really see in English Canada to that degree.
You don't see it anymore. That's an interesting point. You know, if you think influential columnists in Canada, you think Andrew Coyne, obviously. For me, anyway, I read Andrew Coyne all the time, agree with him or not agree with him. I find him a very interesting person to write. But he doesn't have nearly the influence, I would argue, that someone like Richard Martineau has. Now, Richard Martineau is a formerly left-wing columnist for a free weekly called Voir. I actually worked with him way, way back in the day. Martineau was on his way out as editor, and he was still a columnist there.
Mm-hmm.
His old stuff was better thought out. It wasn't full of what he is now. And I'm not talking about ideologically. I'm talking about all caps and exclamation points. That's what he is today. He's a hot take machine. So he will just get angry at something. And he literally does it, I don't know, 4 or 5 times a week in a column, on the radio, on TV, et cetera, et cetera. And that's his gig now. That's what he does. You know, a lot of us can sort of sit around and go, it's terrible that he's sort of debased himself to this point. But the fact remains is that he's extremely, extremely popular.
His ideology, Marty, as you describe it in your piece, is that Quebec is under siege by a multi-headed hydra comprised of feminists, Islam, immigrants, English-speaking people, young people, leftists, the Black Lives Matter movement, the mayor of Montreal in general, and, quote, obese, pansexual, penguin, non-gendered, trans Muslims, to name a few. But the last one, I guess, is Richard Martineau joking.
That's right.
This stuff is popular?
Yeah, it's popular. He's had a job with Quebecor of one sort or another. He made a really big deal about being a freelancer back in the day. I don't know if he's employed now or if he's remained freelancer as one client. But he's basically been there for, 17 years now, doing various intonations of his shtick, which is to say that he's the aggrieved everyman who gets to say and do what he wants despite the well-meaning mob trying to stop him. And it works quite well.
I wonder where this gets placed in a larger conversation about like the two solitudes and how I think a really distinctive culture that prides itself on I think being less tight-assed and politically correct.
Right.
But those divisions are kind of collapsing, you know, like there was this whole thing for a long time about how, oh, blackface in Quebec isn't the same thing. It doesn't mean the same thing as mm-hmm. blackface elsewhere. And we should be allowed to do it. Comedians here should be allowed to do it. And eventually I think that it was just like that fight was lost was my takeaway from the last time that skirmish broke out. An aspect of your piece I found really interesting was that there's this younger generation of journalists at the Journal that are leaving because of Martineau. And it's not even necessarily like I'm taking a principled stand against his politics, but they're just embarrassed to be associated with a paper that publishes Richard Martineau.
Yeah, and I don't want to limit this to Martineau. It's pretty much all, I would say 90% of the columnists on the roster, because they say a lot of the same things, and it's a similar kind of take on a lot of the issues. You know, I quote Daniel Weinstock in the piece. He says, like, you know, they're not all ideologically identical, but they're pretty damn close. I'm paraphrasing him, of course. That was one of the things I discovered, was that the Journal de Montréal, to the Journal de Montréal's credit, take on a lot of young people. They are hiring young people. They let people do things that you wouldn't get away with at Radio-Canada, or you wouldn't have gotten away with at La Presse if La Presse was hiring. And it's a great place to work. But there's always this sort of white elephant in the room, and it's these columnists. Like, not only are the columnists popular and take up a lot of space, it's that the Journal de Montréal and Quebecor in general really hypes them on every single platform that they have. Mm-hmm. To the point where, you know, you call up someone to do an interview and it's like, oh, do you know Richard Martineau? And that either works really well for you if this person happens to like Martineau, or if not, it's just like, I'm not talking to you because you are associated with Richard Martineau. Either way, it sort of distorts your job as a journalist.
And I guess I take from this that, like, there is a sensitivity to these things and like an awareness about them. And basically, it's become a problem, at least for some people involved. Like something might be changing.
They're bringing in new voices. I'm told that there's going to be changes afoot, fairly drastic, on the editorial pages in the months that are coming. The one thing I would say about that, though, is that I don't think the Mathieu Bock-Côtés and the Richard Martineau, and Bock-Côté being another columnist there that fairly contentious, I don't think they're going anywhere. And to me, the proof positive, of course, was the sort of the hook of that piece that I wrote, was that Richard Martineau literally wrote a column in which he predicated it on words that a man never said, despite him saying the opposite. And it didn't get retracted. There was no correction appended to it. The column is still sitting there online, even though it is demonstrably wrong. He can get away with that kind of thing because of the eyeballs he pulls to Journal de Montréal. I think, like any newspaper that has something good going for it right now, they're not going to try to give the public less of that.
That is your Canada Land Shortcuts. Martin Patrick Quinn, thank you very much for talking to me today.
Thanks for having me.
It has never been easier to support Canada Land than it is at this exact moment. You just hit the link in the show notes or go to canadalandshow.com/join and you'll get ad-free versions of these podcasts and you will help this independent news company. $5 a month. Go and do it. You can also email me if you want to at jesse@canadalandshow.com. I read everything that gets sent to us. We are on Twitter @CanadaLand. We're on Instagram @CanadaLandShow. Go check that out. Martin, where can people find you?
The Logic, www.thelogic.co. We are a subscription-based news service that covers Canada's tech and innovation economies. And we rely entirely on readers. There's no advertising or anything like this. And it is a new model of journalism. I suggest anybody that wants to read more about Canada's innovation and technology spheres that they subscribe to The Logic.
Our website is canadalandshow.com, and we have a new episode of Oppo up this week, which looks at the federal government's contact tracing app and does a thorough privacy audit on the show. Chris Parsons from the Citizen Lab. Check that out. This episode is produced by Shortcut's new producer, Tiffany Lamb. Welcome, Tiffany. And our outgoing producer, David Crosby, is moving on to other things within Canada Land. Thank you for everything, David. Our managing editor is Andrea Schmidt. Syndication is by CFUV 101.9 FM in Victoria. Visit them online at cfuv.ca. Please support Canada Land.